and welcome Laura Dorrell, if I said that correctly.
Dorley,
I'm sorry. I didn't ask you when we were introduced. Yeah. Laura, for the next 45 minutes, we'll have a conversation, question and answer. We're also going to begin by giving you a few minutes to give us an opening statement. And then when we're done with the opening statement, we'll begin with the questions. So,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I ask that? I almost made a terrible mistake. My hearing isn't all that great. In the last person that spoke to us, I thought when she said, I thought you were going to grill me more, I thought she said you were going to bore me more. And so can we ask you to speak, please, into the microphone, and it'll help at least my hearing. I hope it'll help some others. So I wouldn't want to make a mistake like that.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do the best I can. All right. Well, first off, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here. It's a great honor to be considered for the student-at-large position. And I never thought that I would be standing before you today. I grew up in the booming metropolis of St. Cloud, Minnesota. And although I did well in school, I was incredibly shy. And so if somebody would have told me 10 years ago that I would be where I am now, president of a student group, conducting interviews for research under a prominent professor at the University of Minnesota, and a successful student with dreams of working in public service, I would have never believed him or her. My ambitions then, when I was a child, were to be a writer, sharing my voice behind the comfort of a computer. But since then, I've realized that even though my love of writing is still strong, I am also a leader. I started my college career at the University of California, Davis. And although I had a great year there, and I loved living in the Golden State, Minnesota was my home, and the U of M not so bad a school either. So I transferred here in the fall of 2011 to the University of Minnesota. My time at Davis helped to mold and shape my career goals and also my leadership skills. That fall, my first fall there, I started volunteering with CalPERG on a campaign to canvass the student body to help get petitions to vote no on a proposition that would have suspended California's emissions goals. Needless to say, it didn't pass. I was passionate about that work and student organizing, and I soon became a core member of the group. And I attended the state board meeting that fall. In the next quarter, that winter quarter at UC Davis, I took on the position with a new vacancy, the Oceans and Forest Conservation Campaign Coordinator. As a timid Minnesotan fresh out of high school, I may not have been the best leader, but I was motivated. And I soon came to realize that in this competitive world, motivation often trumps skill. And that is the same position I take coming here today. Because a motivated, unskilled person can easily learn skill, which I did. But an unmotivated, unskilled person cannot easily learn motivation. And so today I come to you, maybe not with the greatest wealth of formal governing experience, but I'm motivated. And my motivation and my leadership experience in the past few years will help to make me do a good job at representing this university. And what a great university it is. I have learned in my year and a half studying here at the University of Minnesota thus far, and that it is truly a premier learning institution, and I have come to feel like an integrated member of its great community. It also has roots in my family. Both my parents attended the University of Minnesota. And with the University of Minnesota's role in the broader community and my family's roots in St. Paul, I know that it's provided value to my family for many generations beyond my parents. That quarter at Davis, I led five fellow interns. They were all freshmen, as was I, on a native planting project, working at an edible orchard on campus, and on a campaign to reduce plastic waste in the city of Davis. I facilitated weekly campaign meetings, spoke at city council meetings, and planned a documentary screening that spring. This work provided me not only skill in leadership and communication, but it also led me to the field that I know I want to be in my career, and that is environmental policy. And that's where I stand today, a junior in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Science at the University of Minnesota, studying environmental science, policy, and management with a focus in policy. And here it is that I've had an active role in the three components of the university's mission. And I know that's the first listed role as an individual regent, is to support the mission of the university. And so, in the first component, in research and discovery, I have been involved in research with Professor Kristen Nelson on a project studying the ecological homogenization in urban areas. The nationwide study in interdisciplinary, and it's been a great experience. I've been able to conduct interviews in the field of 21 homeowners in the Twin Cities and been able to analyze that data. And teaching and learning by being a hardworking student at this university. And finally, in outreach and public service by serving as the president of a newly formed student group, Youth Students Like Good Food, through raising awareness of food issues on campus and in the broader community, and working collaboratively with university staff and faculty and those working in the broader community to help improve the sustainability, health, and access of the food system in the Twin Cities and broader Minnesota. And so going forward, I will continue to support this mission the way that I have been, serving as a member of the Board of Regents, by staying involved and informed and not letting that interfere with the responsibility of ethics and the responsibility to represent the university as a whole. I have one more year as a student here, and more if I attend law school at this great university. And I think that, as well as my past experiences, will allow me to provide a unique perspective to this Board of Regents. So thanks again.
Thank you. And the chair is going to indulge here and ask a question of clarification,
okay.
Since I'm also a graduate of the same college that you are attending.
Okay.
I have no idea what ecological homogenization.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the term you used?
It is the term. The okay. name of the project.
I'm going to show my ignorance here.
The name of the project is Ecological Homogenization of Urban Air America. And yes, sorry, I should have clarified that more. It's, you know, a term that's more used in the field and it's very new. The project is studying the hypothesis of that the native plants and ecology that exists in urban areas, urban lawns is what we're looking at particularly, if that's similar to the native areas that surround the Twin Cities, so prairie areas, forest areas. And their hypothesis is that the urban ecology in different cities that they're studying is more similar to each other than it's similar to its surrounding native areas.
Okay. Thank yes. you. That was a personal indulgence of mine, so thank you.
All right.
Harriet?
Sure. Obviously, you've answered the application questions very thoughtfully and given great consideration to this, given the amount of time that is required in this role if you were elected to this position. When you think about being a regent, what is the most attractive feature of being a regent to you? What do you think your favorite part of being a regent would likely be, and why?
Well, I think my favorite part would just the chance to be able to represent the university and learn more about its operations and being involved with people with great experience and having the opportunity to learn more and to help develop my career skills because, like I said earlier, I do want to work in public service, and this is an amazing opportunity to start doing so.
Thank you.
Yeah. Paul?
Your application talks about you students like good food, and that you also made reference to doing some research about food costs and some potential pushback from Aramark senior management. I'm intrigued about that reference, and tell us a little bit more about it and what your role is in that situation.
Yeah, definitely. So this past year, I have gotten involved with an organization, a national organizing organization called the Real Food Challenge. And what they do is work on college campuses with students to try and improve the sustainability of their food system. And they have a tool called the Real Food Calculator, which is the tool that I referred to in my application, which is basically a tool for students to be able to delve in and sort of audit the university's food buying system to see where the food comes from. And so we have had really fantastic relations with the marketing manager of University Dining Services, who basically speaks to the director of dining. But Aramark in the past year has been reluctant to accept this tool as a formal way for students to go in and look at their food system more deeply. And so after that first meeting, it really went well. But the hesitation came later when we met with the marketing manager, and she went to the director of dining because Aramark had put out a memo about a year ago, basically saying that University Dining Services does not support the work of the Real Food Challenge. So that's what I was referring to. But we are continuing to talk with staff from University Dining Services, as well as faculty and people in the sustainability department, about how we can do this work and making sure that we are not trying to be antagonistic, and the complications really come in at the national level and, you know, at the corporate level with Aramark Corporate. So, but we're definitely trying to work with Aramark and the university. So, yeah.
A follow-up? Can I have a follow-up on this question?
Yes.
You're going to continue to work on it. How politically are you going to continue to work on this? What people are you going to involve? I see a scenario of a great example, not finished, an issue that was brought forth for an awakening, and it's been tabled. What will you do as a leader? Because you mentioned earlier that you see yourself as a leader. What does a leader do now?
Well, right now, we actually have continued the conversation. I've met with two of the sustainability directors with the university to help clarify what our goals are and exactly how the Real Food Calculator can help to meet those. So right now, I have met with a couple of students in the student group that would like to do this work next semester as a form of an internship. So we talked to both of the sustainability directors about how we can form this into an internship and how we can start this work. And so right now, the way that we're moving forward is to write up a proposal for the internship happening. And so right now, we are going to just plan on working with the staff that currently do their sustainability reporting, and also look more deeply at a comparison between their current tool, HD Stars, and the Real Food Calculator. And also, I have been working with students across the nation. They have a group of students that are also trying to do this work that are also at university campuses that are run under Aramark's dining program. So I've been talking with them and seeing what kind of work they're doing. I met with a student from Drew University, and they had done a comparison of those two tools in the past year. So my next step is to sit down and have another meeting with the sustainability directors to talk further about the information that I've found since our last meeting.
David?
Well, I'm going to delve into something that is going to be a little more esoteric, but it nevertheless is important, and you've responded to some of it in your written responses. The legislature meets today, and it starts a new budget cycle for the University of Minnesota in some ways. There is a budget request there. I've always thought personally that funding of the university is a tool to achieve some goals. I'm just wondering, what if you become a regent and for the next 6 years serve in such, what would be your goals for the University of Minnesota, and what would you fund in order to achieve those goals?
Well, I understand that, you know, funding is very complicated, but it's been a serious issue, especially with my time in California. As I mentioned before, you know, they have an even greater problem than we do, and I witnessed it while I was there. I know that President Kaler has come out this year talking about the tuition freeze, two-year tuition freeze that people are asking for, and I definitely support that. But, you know, I can't say with certainty what I would fund looking at the budget without, you know, having it in front of me. But I definitely think it's important that most of the funding from the state goes to directly impact students, whether that's in teaching, classroom, you know, facilities, anything that directly goes to the education for students, I think is the most important thing, because all in all, that's why the university exists.
You may know that one of the objectives of the University of Minnesota under its current strategic plan is to become a top-notch research institution. Do you see a conflict between your goals for student-facing enterprises and the research objective of the university?
No, I think that there is an important balance that can be struck, because in the end, like I mentioned earlier, I haven't been involved with research myself. So at a top university like the University of Minnesota, I think that research is directly correlated with the quality of education that a student receives. And there's a lot of opportunity for students at this university to be involved with research. And, you know, many undergrads seek to go on to graduate programs and professional programs in which they will be involved with research themselves. So I don't think there's a conflict. I think there's an important balance that can be struck in the funding of the two.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Lewis?
I'd like to talk with you, if you would please, about economic development and mention a few dots that perhaps you would be kind enough to connect. One is you are from Greater Minnesota. Two is you've had experience at another land-grant university, at a portion of another land-grant university. Three is you are speaking with students in other parts of the nation and gleaning information and insight from them. So kind of with those things in the back of your mind. And then going to the food discussion, you're actively engaged with an initiative. You're working with research with it. It's around food, a topic that is strong in Minnesota, both from a food processing and from an agricultural perspective. So with that insight about how the university works in CFANS, this, you know, fine college of the campus, how might those experiences enable you to contribute around the topic of the University of Minnesota being an economic driver for the state of Minnesota? So if we take the food and the agricultural topic, how might you encourage, as a sitting regent, the university to be an economic driver for the state of Minnesota?
Okay. Well, all of the work that I have done so far in organizing around food and agricultural issues, I definitely learned within the past year and a half to take a real holistic approach, because food, and the same way that we've been trying to do with the group, is attract people from all walks of life, from all different backgrounds and majors. But food is important to people in many different ways. But, you know, it's important to everybody because everybody eats. But in improving the sustainability of the food at the University of Minnesota and within the greater state of Minnesota, I think it is an economic driver. And starting, you know, directly within the bounds of the university campus, in doing this research and in working to see how we can improve the food that's on campus. If the university continues to make progress with this, it will continue to show innovation from the university, and it will also make it very attractive to other people across the nation and the world and from different parts of the state of Minnesota. And with the university's role as a research hub, that research could have impacts on the whole state of Minnesota, as we are an important agricultural state. So I kind of talked around there, but hopefully that touched on what you're asking.
Have you found, if I may, Mr. Chair, have you found openness within the college for outreach and connecting into the community? Is that a mechanism that your experience shows is working, or your experience shows has room for change, modification, improvement?
I think that there are good portions of it that are working very well, but there is definitely room for improvement. I know, for instance, that the extension component of the university has become much more one that is online and through educational resources rather than physical support. So there's less direct contact between the communities outside of the university with those researchers, and I think that's a place where there could be improvement, though I'm not sure exactly how.
Okay, thank you.
Jennifer?
I wanted you to comment a little bit about the issue of access to higher education for communities of color, underrepresented groups to the university. What are your thoughts, and what role could you play as a region on that topic?
I think my thoughts are that there's always room for improvement, and I'd seen working around food issues, I think there's a direct correlation there, because I have talked to a lot of people who talk to their work focuses on access to food and healthy food for communities of color and minority communities. So I think that, I don't know exactly right now how, what the university's current role in that looks like, though I do have, friends of color and have seen the opportunities provided. But it's definitely an issue that's very important to me. And coming from a well-off family in central Minnesota and being white, I think white privilege has always played this role in my life and the work I do, and I really have tried to make an effort to put myself out there and try and understand different backgrounds and different cultural perspectives. So it's something that's very important to me, and it's something that, if I was elected as a regent, would definitely be an important thing for me to research and look into and see how the university is doing right now.
Joanne.
Laura, can you describe your understanding of academic freedom and the issues surrounding it?
I guess I haven't come into direct contact with the term, but I can sort of infer what the term implies, is that all students at a place of education should have the freedom to speak and say what is of importance to them. And for me, it also brings in my work as a student organizer and being involved in grassroots organizing on college campuses. I think that's a very important portion of academic freedom and also a very important portion of a student's education. So I think it's also very important that students at any level of their education be able to have a say in what happens at their educational institution. So hopefully that hits on what the question was directed at.
Actually, George.
Okay.
Ms. Darley, I have a softball question for you that you'll appreciate. Recognizing that the university is a land-grant institution and one of the areas is teaching and learning, how do you perceive the challenges or threats to the university in the next 5 to 10 years, specifically pertaining to students? You're looking to represent the students or student region. How do you see what's happening in the next 5 to 10 years with the university as it applies to students?
There are a few things, I think, that present challenge for students. In the past decade, I know that the university has grown to serve a much greater base of students, while at the same time facing budget constraints. So there have been, less positions for faculty members. I'd seen more online classes for some of the general classes, which I think can work, but I have also seen students come through those classes, and it is definitely not the same level of quality education. Talking about budget earlier, ensuring that in this time of hard economics that, we are able to keep the university affordable for everyone, and that access is widespread, and that for those who cannot afford the current prices of tuition, the university still is able to maintain a level of financial support for those students. And then a third thing, you mentioned the university being a land-grant university, and me coming from the College of CFANS, and I also see challenges in the next 5 years, as we've seen in the past, coming to the land that the university has on the campus for students studying agriculture and, the animals and so forth, and then the research opportunities that are provided there for students that are studying in the fields of agriculture.
Margaret, did you have a...
Mm-hmm. Students have real access to the Board of Regents. They sit on every one of the standing committees for the Board of Regents, in addition to the one seat that is selected as a student regent and then becomes a regent. As you thought about this volunteer opportunity, did you take it upon yourself to sit in on those regents meetings or the committee meetings, or have conversations with people that are those student regent representatives now? And then second part, if you did, what made you say, I can do this, or caused you a little bit of angst and said, that's where I'll need to grow? So two-part question. How much research have you done? And then your perception of yourself.
Okay. Well, to be honest, the decision to apply for this position was later on this semester. And with all the work that I have been doing, I didn't have a chance to, sit in on many of the meetings, and I'd been here for a year and a half, but it's definitely something that I would have liked to do. However, in my work with the student group, as well as just my general curiosity, I have sat in on meetings with the Board of Governors that's run by students, and also in the course of applying for this position, I did continue to follow up on, what the important issues were for this Board of Regents. And what made me excited was, like you said, the ability for students to have access to the Board of Regents. I think that is something that is a fantastic opportunity. And again, is what I'm most excited about, is learning about the inner workings of the university, so that in the work I do as a regent and in the work that I will continue to do with my student group and around food and agricultural issues, I will have a better understanding so I can really speak from an informed perspective. What I guess, my research and my sitting in on other meetings, the you know, the point that gives me a lot of angst, and that always does, is like I mentioned in my opening statement, you know, I grew up being very shy, so there's always this point for me of intimidation in positions such as this, and, you know, just continuing to make sure that I stay involved and informed and use that information to help me really speak up and speak my mind and issues that are important to me to help be the best person that I can be for this position. So,
mm-hmm. Ardell?
Ms. Dorley, I'm on the Minnesota State Arts Board, and in that context, what do you feel is the importance of the arts at the University of Minnesota, whether it's music, theater, et cetera, both in student life and professionally?
Well, to start, I have a good friend who is currently studying in the music program at the university, studying to be an opera singer. And knowing that we have one of the best programs in that field, you know, I think is incredibly valuable. And all of the arts are incredibly valuable. In fact, before I really got into environmental issues, I was planning on studying English and literature, and that was my primary interest. But speaking from the perspective of the broader community, the Twin Cities has a thriving arts community, and I think that's really driven by the quality of education in the arts that the University of Minnesota provides. And that's both valuable to the direct community of the Twin Cities, to the broader community of the state of Minnesota, but also to the nation and the world, because, for one, it will draw people to the Twin Cities and Minnesota from those outside areas. And also, it will bring great artists from the state of Minnesota outside to the nation and the world to represent the great state and our great university. So I think it's very important.
Thank you.
Harriet?
Sure. This probably should have been a follow-up question earlier, but I want to step back to sort of the political quagmire that occurred with the food calculator and the letter from Aramont. What did you learn from that experience? And if you were doing the same thing again today, what would you do differently?
Yeah, that's a great question. I definitely learned a lot in the experience. And I think before even going into that experience, my work in California on the issue of plastic waste, particularly in the area of single-use plastic bags, enabled me to learn a lot about how to handle those issues where there might be that sort of conflict that comes up. And there definitely was. You know, I went into that thinking, oh, the city of Davis is very green-minded, one of the most educated cities in the country. This is going to be operate very smoothly. And then going into the city council meetings, the city council members were very receptive to what I and others had to say. But it continued to move very slowly and is still in the process. And throughout that time, I read editorials in the local newspaper, hearing what some of the members of the community had to say. And I really had to watch myself and try and put myself in the shoes of other people, even though I may not have understood very well where some of the pushback to that issue was coming from. And so going into this work here at the university with food, I was aware beforehand that, you know, there was a point of conflict here doing this work. And I definitely feel that in all of the work that I have done in organizing around issues such as food or, you know, waste or whatever they may be, that it is really important, as I mentioned earlier, to not be in a place that's antagonistic. So what I learned was going into the first meeting that we had with the marketing manager where we kind of, you know, talked about the work that we had done with the Real Food Challenge prior to that and what we were looking at doing with the Real Food Calculator. We were we were pretty informed and knew what we were talking about, but we definitely could have been more so that we could have answered their questions. One of the things I've learned, too, is to always make sure and thank the people that you're working with, because I think that's maybe there would not have been so much conflict had we made that more clear. You know, we had stated that in the meeting, but to continue to make sure people understand that we are very grateful for all the work that the university has done thus far in the realm of sustainability, directly related to food. So going forward, just making sure that we keep the conversation going and clarified, and there are no points of misunderstanding, or if there are, we make sure to clear those up as soon as possible. So,
thank you. Can just a quick follow-up to that? How do you think that your personality has helped improve that relationship or smooth things over? Has it?
Well, I would hope that it has, and I think that it has. I think that my personality, at least I try to make it very... I'm very passionate, and I have a passionate personality, but in everything I do, I make sure to take everything with a grain of salt and, you know, really make things a casual conversation, and that's the way that many of these meetings have felt. And I think that I am a trusting, believable person as well. So when I've had these meetings and clarify any questions that any of these staff members have, I think that they really understand that we're going to a good place and we're really just trying to work collaboratively with the university to help improve food. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Jerry, did you have a...
Yeah. In your opening statement, you mentioned that you haven't had much experience in a formal board setting. Mm-hmm. But I was impressed by your statement that motivation will trump skills every time. So tell me what motivates you, or how will you use that motivation to develop the skills that you may at this time think that you need to be a member of the Board of Regents?
Well, I think that, you know, the reason that I applied for this position, and really, you know, the reason that I desire to have a career in public service, is that I am very passionate about people and very passionate about the environment, and that drives me forward in everything that I do. When I got the position of researching with my professor, I had just sent her an email. I hadn't had her for any course before, just saying, are there, you know, I just like to have sit down and see if there are any research opportunities available within the college, you know, with any of your colleagues. And I ended up getting a position that next January, so I realized that the importance of making connections and really getting out there and talking to people. And so that's the same perspective that I would take if I were elected to the Board of Regents, is always taking or making that extra step of talking to people, asking questions, so I can really learn and understand the process. So, yes, I am motivated by this passion to serve people and to... continue to make this state and the planet a great place to live, and I always seek opportunity to ask questions and to learn the process quickly, as I have before with my past experiences. So.
We are nearing the time when we're almost done. We're going to have one more question from Jim, and then we'll... After Jim is done, we'll go to the closing statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Laura, tell us about the genesis of your interest in being on the Board of Regents. Was it self-generated when you saw an ad, or did some of your mentors or colleagues come to you and recommend you, and then how you processed deciding actually that you wanted to proceed with it?
It was really self-generated. You know, I kind of followed news about the Board of Regents, but it really wasn't on my radar that there was this student-at-large position open until I received an email that was sent to many student leaders on campus. And I thought, you know, I have really been looking for some experience in the realm of governing, as I do want a career in public service. And that's really when I started thinking, wow, this would be an incredible opportunity. And so I applied, and in the past month I have, you know, looked into the history of the U of M and the Board of Regents and the responsibilities that the board takes on, the issues that have been worked on in the past, and it's just continued to spark my interest in taking on this position.
Thank you. And the chair is going to indulge here just very briefly, not following up with Jim's question. Where do you get your news? What five places, or name the whatever, top three, top five, where do you get your news?
Okay. Well, to start, this may sound silly, but I have always been very interested in Nicholas Kristof's career of the New York Times. So early on in high school, I began reading the New York Times and his columns. So that's one source, you know, primarily online. I didn't have a subscription. And because I was interested in being a writer, I always looked to seek news from newspapers. And whenever I'm in a place, I try and read a little bit of the local newspaper. So that's two sources right there. Also, being in this generation, I have found, and I was reluctant at first, but that social media is actually a very, it's a very interesting tool to get some, you know, quick sources of news and to be able to follow up on the sources that are coming. So, you know, I will follow in different important people who work in media. And then continue, you know, to search online for different sources. So, of course, the internet is an important source of media. Let's see, what else? I am an avid listener of NPR, and so on my walks to school, I will stream that station on my phone. And also being in the academic setting, a lot of my information, maybe not so much on current issues, but on past issues, comes from academic journal articles, as I read many, many of them throughout the course of a semester. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Kiddo, we're ready for closing statement.
All right. Well,
and if there's a question that we should have asked and didn't, this would be your time too. So.
Okay. Well, I can't think of a question that wasn't asked, but again, like I said in the beginning, this has really been an honor, and I want to thank each and every one of you once again for giving me the opportunity to be here and speak with you. And I hope that what I have said throughout the course of this, you know, nearly an hour has shown that I am truly interested in this position and that I have leadership and communication skills to represent the University of Minnesota and this great community well on the Board of Regents. So, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you are a very good writer, and I wrote that on your application before you said you wanted to be a writer.
Thank you very much.